The recording is on. Good afternoon, evening, or I guess very early morning for some of you. Thank you all for joining us. We had an initial call several months ago, but given the press of getting the bylaws done and out, we thought it made sense to pause on the work of this committee now that that is nearly done and the transition is fast upon us. It makes sense to get started here. I wanted to just cover some preliminary issues here, get a sort of general sense of the tasks that this group is facing, talk some about timing, and then have a discussion with each other about how we will work together. This is obviously, if I can just say, you know, from my perspective, the work that we are doing here is absolutely critical to the accountability enhancements here. I certainly have long been an advocate for rounding out ICANN with a independent judiciary function. It's very interesting. It's very important. I think the work that we do here will have a huge impact on the success of our accountability reforms that we've all been working on for the past 2 years, 18 months, I don't know. If I could, I just wanted to sort of flash quickly information about the members of this implementation oversight team. The CCWG co-chairs I expect will participate from time to time. Thomas Rickert was planning to participate, but his plans were overtaken by events. But I know that they will be closely monitoring our progress here. Gregory and Ed McNicholas from Sidley Austin, who have been guiding the CCWG accountability work from a legal perspective, will be joining us, and they have kindly offered to give us two lawyers for the price of one at these calls. We will have lawyers from Jones Day on the phone. I see Kate is with us today.
And Jeff will be as well.
Oh, hi, Jeff. I should have asked if there's anybody who's not in the who's on the call but not in the Adobe room.
I am not in the Adobe room.
Okay. If anybody else? Well, obviously, the folks at Jones Day have lived with the IP in its present form, and so their insights are going to be extremely helpful. We do have an IoT implementation oversight team page on the accountability wiki with the mailing list here, but I just thought for everybody's reference, since at least a couple of folks were not involved in every single call, that it would be useful to have just this list here. Just make sure I didn't skip anything. So in terms of our substantive tasks, and this may be shorthanded, I essentially went through CCWG report and the draft bylaws to kind of identify what the work of this group will be. One of our very first tasks will be to sort of provide some consultation for ICANN staff in working up the selection of the organization that will provide the administrative support for the IRP. The task of issuing the tender document does fall to ICANN, and I did speak with John Jeffrey and Sam Eisner, and they are working on a draft IRP, or a draft RFP for administrative support providers that will come to this group for review before ICANN issues it. But that is something that needs to happen in the reasonably near future so that we can get this process rolling. In addition, the bylaws call on ICANN to issue, after consultation, a call for expressions of interest from potential panelists. And again, that's something we need to probably have the administrative provider in place for. But again, that's something that will come to this group for review. This group needs to develop and recommend a proposal for the manner in which the community will review and select the proposed slate of panel members. As you guys may recall, the community proposes and the ICANN board has the role of confirming or rejecting the proposed panelists. So that is something that I think we will need to do. And then finally, we will need to work as a group with the provider once it's on board, and I think with the panelists once they are on board, to develop detailed rules of procedures for the independent review panel, which will be then it would be up to the board to adopt those rules of procedure. The draft, the report itself, and the bylaws that are under consideration right now specify some of the tests, confirmation with international arbitration norms, streamlined, easy to understand, and to apply fairly to all parties. So that will be a very big chunk of our work. If I could just stop here and ask Holly and Ed if I've omitted any major sort of work streams for us here.
I think that's a good high-level description, Becky. I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Administrative issues that we need to resolve today, and I'd like to have some discussion on this, is sort of our timeline. I think that the bylaws do contemplate that there may be some gap between the time that the bylaws are adopted and when the panel is in place, so we don't have to have these done by next week, which is a good thing because that would not be possible. The really sort of time-critical piece is the RFP for the service provider, as I mentioned earlier, but assuming that the transition.
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
Okay, I'm not sure who left the meeting, but somebody did. But we want to get going and do some work on that. So, as I said, our near-term timeline, and I don't know if Sam or anybody else from ICANN wants to provide any information on timing for when we might see a draft RFP.
Becky, this is Sam. So we haven't started drafting an RFP. It's something we could do. We think that, we'll take a look and draft it based off of what's in the bylaws and what we understand to be so far as necessary. One of the things that we've learned from the prior iteration of getting to the ICDR as the IRP provider that we have today is that really it's the types of variances from their standard rules that really are where the providers look for as to whether or not it's even possible for them to step into that role. And I know, Becky, that in conversations with you, we've discussed that this would be likely a more atypical provider, not necessarily one of the large arbitration providers, but more along the scale of a more specified provider, such as the types that are used by the World Bank or something. So we do have some work that we could start doing on that very quickly, but I think we would still need some guidance from the IoT regarding other special rules that would be really important, because it's really that gives the providers the ability to understand whether or not it's a realm that they're able to step into and even participate in the offer. So I think this has to be a joint process. So we could take the first step, do an RFP document. We need a few weeks to get that done. I think we have to get over the hump of the bylaws, so we'll have a clear idea of timing next week. And then we could use that as a place for conversation with this group to see where there are holes that need to be filled in and how we want to collectively frame the RFP to make sure that it's actually stating the goals that we needed to state so that we have the most success of getting a provider that's capable of serving the role on the first pass.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I think we will, sort of substantively move into some substantive conversations quickly. I do think it probably makes sense to start drafting just based on what's in the bylaws and the report, and then we can focus on some of the issues that we would want to clarify in the early calls to help make that process more meaningful. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was meetings and frequency and timing. I think that once we get rolling, we should try to have a weekly meeting and really sort of dig into the substance as insofar as possible. What I propose to do is do some doodle polling on date and time. I would like the date and times to be relatively consistent, obviously with some rotation of hours to accommodate folks who are in different parts of the world. But hopefully, you know, we can get, you know, pretty consistent and predictable timelines on that. So I'm interested in, you know, thoughts on that if anybody has views on it. We were set up as sort of members of the IoT, but I did think that we should have a conversation. The CCWG itself, has both members and participants. The process that we used to get to this group includes both CCWG members and CCWG participants as members of the IoT. And given the sort of nature of our work, anybody is permitted to sort of be an observer, it's going to be important for us to keep consistent group with pretty good discipline about attending the calls and the like. So I just wanted to raise that as an issue. Does anybody have any thoughts or comments on sort of other administrative issues? We have had some conversation, Holly and Ed and I, and it was our view that we would really try to talk through some of the substantive issues with respect to the detailed rules of procedure and really get the groups thinking on those before we sort of started putting pen to paper and creating frameworks on that. Tijani, I see your hand.
Thank you very much, Becky.
Tijani speaking.
Question about the members, observers, participants. I didn't understand your explanation. Can you please tell me who will be the members and who will be the observers or the participants?
Okay, so
all members of CCWG would be members of this group, or only people who express their interest to be in? Thank you.
So no, this group, the members of this group, are the folks that were on the list who raised their hand, expressed interest, or were voluntold by somebody else. It is a specific group who are the members here. Some of the members of this group are members of the CCWG. Some of the members of this group are participants in the CCWG. People... for example, we specifically wanted to make sure that we had people with civil law, you know, from civil law traditions who could speak to their experience on this. And so, we looked beyond the CCWG to include Marianne from .fr, who was kindly volunteered by Mathieu, and as a French attorney can bring that perspective to the table. In general, so the members of this group are the members who are on that list and who are part of the list. Obviously, other people, if they want to be observers, I think that in the tradition of the CCWG, we would certainly need to permit that. My only question, or, you know, sort of slight caution is that we really need to have a stable group of folks who attend, and it might be hard for this group to accommodate observers or participants who just sort of drop in and out of the process. That was the only point I was making to Johnny.
Okay, may I have a follow-up question, please? Is this list closed today, or is it open for anyone to join as a member? First question. And second question, shall we use or apply the same rules of the charter of the CWG regarding the members and the observers, or shall we use other rules? Thank you.
So this group is a fixed group. It was not, we did essentially go through a process in the CCWG where the members of the IOT were appointed. We did ask for volunteers, and as it happened, we had a fairly, all of the volunteers were appointed. The notion was, and the thinking of the co-chairs that was endorsed by the group, is that this should be a smaller rather than a large and unwieldy group, because there would be fairly technical drafting. I think that we would, if other people wanted to be appointed, we would need to go back to the co-chairs for their input on it, to Johnny. Now, as I said, our meetings are open. So anybody who wants to be an observer is clearly permitted to be an observer, and then it will be up to the group, should we have observers, to decide, whether we want to have the same rules, which is, essentially whether you're a member or just an observer participant, you have an equal voice. Again, I think that we need to be concerned about the size of the group and the consistency of the group. And so for me, that's the critical feature. But I don't think at this point we need to be concerned, because I think this is essentially, the people who wanted to be on this raised their hands and all of us were appointed. David McCauley?
Thank you, Becky. I'm just responding to your call for questions, and it's really a question of clarification. I don't remember, but did we address what the amended bylaws, what the impact is going to be with respect to pending IRP cases, those that are underway right now? Is that anything to do with this, the work of our group?
My understanding, and Holly, you tell me if I'm wrong, the standard of review would be adopted by as the bylaws, when the bylaws are adopted. My understanding, based on conversations, was that the board was in at some measure surprised by some of the changes in the standard, and was comfortable with going back to the substantive standard more or less right away. I don't think it was in our remit to decide how currently pending IRPs would be dealt with. Holly, am I wrong on that?
I haven't been part of. Hi, it's Holly. I haven't been part of any sort of discussions around how this all works in the transition, so I'd need to go back and think about it and be informed by whatever those discussions that have taken place have been.
Okay. David, that's a really good question. We'll take it offline and report back to the group on it. Robin has asked in the chat about, is there an expectation as to when this subgroup would complete its work? I think that there are a number of dependencies that we can't predict, and some of that depends on when the provider is in place, and obviously the proposal does contemplate that panelists would in fact be part of the, you know, consideration of the detailed procedures once they are in place. So it's hard for me to predict. I would certainly like to get the bulk of our work done sooner rather than later. I say that for two reasons. In November, I won't be available I don't think that it would be appropriate for me to chair this group once I have moved onto the board. And also, I think all of us are anxious to make sure that this process is in place. Having said that, I think it's also incredibly important for us to do high-quality work here, and we are not operating under a drop-dead date, but my hope and expectation is that we could get this mostly rounded up in the fall. Okay, then moving on to sort of the substance here. I did speak with Holly and Ed and asked for essentially to create a library of resources of the kinds of examples of detailed rules and procedures from a variety of different sources that we might want to look at. They came up with quite a number of examples, and we will be distributing to everybody in the group shortly after this call all of the procedures that are listed there. The International Center for Dispute Resolution Procedures is the current ICANN's current IRP, generally, but with some exceptions, some modifications, follows those rules now. The International Chamber of Commerce rules of arbitration are very highly regarded. We wanted to have a European model, and given the sort of international scope of ICANN, would be sending out the Swiss Civil Procedure Code, also the U.S. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. We came up with a couple of different examples. The Stockholm Chamber of Commerce has arbitration rules. There is an International Institute for Conflict Prevention and Resolution that has rules. The WIPO arbitration rules were suggested as fairly succinct set of rules. Now, we're not talking about the UDRP rules here, rather the WIPO arbitration rules. JAMS has a fairly thin set of arbitration rules and procedures that might give us an example. And one that I wanted us to at least have here is the World Bank Inspection Panel's operating procedures. The reason I thought this was an interesting example for us to contemplate is because it is, although it is, it's an advisory court, it issues advisory opinions. It has the same flavor of people who are affected by a World Bank project that is alleged to be performed in a manner that violates the World Bank's own rules for project development. So it had that a kind of internal looking at the internal rules and reflecting the sort of is the organization following its own rules. So I thought that would be useful. Now, I would like to open it up for discussion about whether there are any other particularly good examples that we should be looking at and whether this list omits anything. I don't see any hands. Okay, David. So David McCauley has said in the chat, one thing we might add to any set of rules is the overarching rule that in case of a conflict with bylaws, then the bylaws take precedence and should not simply assume that that's a really good point. And we should start keeping a list of these things. So what I would propose to do when we meet next in advance of that, we will have circulated a document that Holly and Ed are preparing that sort of identifies the main points that we really need to think about addressing and serves as a kind of discussion and consideration checklist for going forward, and also a roadmap to the relevant bylaws provisions themselves. And I would expect that we would spend the next call really focusing in on those issues, getting oriented, talking about some of the sort of choices, larger choices that we might make, and identifying examples of sort of different ways that those choices can be made with reference to the reference documents that we have. And yes, Aubrey, all of the documents and or URLs pointing to them will be on the wiki as well. So we will include these on the wiki itself. So that is my sort of proposal for going forward. Holly and Ed, if you want to talk a little bit more about those two documents just to give people a sense of what's coming and to help us think about whether there's anything else we need to have as a resource once we jump into the substance.
Sure.
Go ahead, Ed.
Okay. On the document for topics to discuss next time, it's proposed to lay out those key questions that we would need to address in deciding how to approach rules of procedure. For instance, it would go into whether you'd want to have some sort of preliminary legal motion, something like a motion to dismiss, so that a claim that was legally unfounded or lacked jurisdiction or frivolous could be confronted and disposed of early on, or whether you don't want to have that sort of thing. The question about whether or not you want to allow for any sort of a discovery process, a limited discovery process, a disclosure process. In some courts, you simply disclose the things on which you're going to rely, and there's no further discovery. Another way of doing that in international models is to have an investigating magistrate model in which the parties present their concerns, the magistrate conducts the investigation, the panelist here conducts the investigation, and then comes back and reaches a ruling. So there are several different models there, also styles of briefing, length of briefing, number of, do we want to allow reply briefs? Do we want to do things in person? Do we want to do things telephonically? Some of this has been touched on in the bylaws, but there's a lot of latitude. And so it's developing a list of those items that are left open from the proposal and bylaws discussion that were left open for implementation, so that we can then run through those and get a sense of the group as to how we want to write up those issues, at least in the draft proposed set of procedures.
Okay, great. Does anybody have any questions about our work or any suggestions for resources? Chris, I see your hand.
Thanks, Becky. Sorry, just coming off mute. Morning, afternoon, evening. Just Sam kind of touched on this, I think, when she made a comment. These lists of resources are all great. Do we have any examples anywhere of systems that have been designed by someone who is not going to end up being their own provider and who is then going to have to put it out to tender for providers? Because as you said, as Sam said, part of the challenge here is the cookie cutter approach to this sort of thing is here are our rules, use them. And I have a little bit of experience with that because when we designed, in a minor way, because when we designed the Australian dispute resolution process for the domain names, it took us a long time to persuade WIPO to become a provider because they simply didn't have the ability to do it without, by using our rules. So I'm curious if we have any examples of processes that have been gone through by organizations that have ended up with an independent provider with their own set of rules.
So the only one I'm familiar with is ICANN itself, which essentially uses the ICDR rules with some minor caveats.
Yeah, because we are likely to end up, with some very specific. I mean, there are sort of buckets of things like Ed was just talking about. Do you want to be able to launch a thing to say this is frivolous and so on, but. We're going to end up, really are going to end up writing our own stuff out at the end. So I just want to flag that we need to keep in mind that we do need to find a provider for all of this at the end of the day.
Right. And I think that's right. I think, in some ways, sort of getting into the center, obviously this, we can't call on the Swiss government or the U.S. federal court system to provide this, but several of the systems on the list are potential providers. And as we discuss the substance, we need to, you know, it may become clear to us who a more natural provider, who one more natural provider is than another.
Than others, yeah. I'm wondering if we should consider, not at this stage, but at various stages throughout the process, if we should consider reaching out to a couple of, two or three of the identified providers to get some input when we're making critical decisions, to get some input from them.
Well, that actually is a really good idea. I mean, you know, there's a sort of continuing question. Would you be would you be willing to provide this if we, you know, changed this?
Yeah. Okay.
Malcolm?
Thanks, Becky.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Becky. Is it a given that we are looking to contract out this function to a dispute resolution provider that offers that as a service, as opposed to constructing a mechanism that will operate this function?
I think a panel
that has its own support mechanism to provide what is necessary for its support.
So it's clearly not simply contracting out this function. I mean, the description is an administrative support function to help us identify panelists and then obviously to help manage the panel and processes to be a provider of additional panelists when the standing panel is overtaxed and the like. I think the assumption is, Malcolm, that the organizations that are most likely to be interested in doing that will be organizations that provide these kinds of services generally, but I don't I do not think that we would limit the tender to those organizations if, you know, the proper group with the proper credentials came along. So, in other words,
wasn't really what I was asking. It was more, are we looking for an existing organization to provide that function rather than to construct one?
I think just for the, the notion is that we would, that there would be a tender for administrative support, and the assumption behind that is that you get an existing organization that comes with the economies of scale and the experience and the resources to provide that service flexibly. But as I said, I don't think that we're ruling out any kind of proposal. Am I answering your question, Malcolm? I'm not sure I am.
Maybe. I mean, it certainly struck me that if we are assuming that we are going to give it to an existing dispute resolution provider, and given the last questions, that the choosing a dispute resolution provider entails adopting their rule set rather than a rule set that we have built, it raises the question as to whether we can be confident that an existing DR provider will necessarily meet our needs.
Well, I'm not. I think that Sam pointed out that there are probably some limits to what existing providers are may be willing to do in terms of deviating from their standard rules. But that is something we need to examine. And let me just say, you know, when ICANN came up with the UDRP, there were no providers of UDRP services. All of them were sort of tailored specifically to this. So my instinct is that that this is, if you are in the business of providing dispute resolution services, this is a fairly interesting project. Aubrey? Your hand keeps going up and down. I can't really tell. It's down now. Chris?
Sorry, mine should be down as well. Becky, apologies.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Under those circumstances, I think we can close a little bit early today. We will get the documentation up in the wiki and circulate it to everybody on the group. We will also be circulating a survey for days of the week and times to see if we can hit on a couple of reliable times that serve most of our needs. With apologies to there's always somebody you have to stay up late at some point or wake up very early. And then we will start the discussion going on the list and plan to speak again next week. Okay, thanks everybody. Have a nice evening or day if it's the early morning for you.
Thank you, Becky. Bye-bye.